This is Under Load, the Sunday edition of the Upward Arc. I'm Andre. I'm a physician, and this is the edition for Sunday, the 23rd of August, 2026. A quick note before we start. What you're about to hear is the written newsletter, adjusted a little for the spoken word. Some of the numbers are rounded, and I've left the citations out because nobody wants to hear me read reference numbers aloud. Every study I mention is fully referenced in the written edition. You'll find it at andrehieg.com. Today, I went to a trade show ready to buy a glucose monitor and left without one. And the finding that changed my mind is this. 18 specialists read the same 20 glucose reports from healthy people, and they could not agree on what they were looking at. The booth was bright with shiny counters. The company had filled it with its products and set aside one section for its over-the-counter glucose monitor. Staff were handing out little treats and packets of electrolyte powder. I had just come from their panel at the show, called Tracking Your Body's Signals for Better Health. Tunde Oyeneyin talked about using glucose data for cardio and preparation. I know her from Peloton, and I like her as a personality. Alexis Ohanian, who co-founded Reddit, brought in a technology and fatherhood perspective, which I find interesting. He had also appeared in the product's own advertising campaign. That's worth keeping in mind when you weigh his role on the company stage. After 3 years of doubt, I wondered whether I should try one and later speak from experience. The booth was big. My estimate is six figures, probably more. I spoke with someone I remember as a brand manager or a salesperson. They kept explaining how the order you eat things in affects your glucose and how the level rises after you eat carbohydrates. I kept asking what a healthy person should do after a normal increase. I never got an answer I could use. I left with a few samples, but not a glucose monitor. I still haven't tried one. That's a fair objection. I'm judging a device I haven't tried myself. I'm a physician with medical and dental degrees, but I don't specialize in endocrinology and I don't treat diabetes. I look at a health device the way I look at any other treatment. Name the problem. Decide what action follows from the result, then check whether that action improves health. I use the same approach on myself. Twice a year, I check my fasting glucose and my HbA1c, which reflects glucose levels over the longer term. My results are 92 milligrams per deciliter and 4.9%. I also take two blood pressure medicines, valsartan and hydrochlorothiazide. My blood pressure is well controlled. I take the tablet and I check the number regularly because there's a clear target, and lowering it reduces risk. Now, hydrochlorothiazide belongs to a family of blood pressure drugs called thiazides, and those drugs nudge fasting glucose upward. Across 95 trials, covering more than 76,000 people, they raised fasting glucose by about 3.5 milligrams per deciliter on average. In the trials that ran 6 months or longer, it was closer to 2.5. The authors called that effect too small to change anyone's care. And that's an average across many trials. It can't tell me what my own number would be without the drug. One more thing about my own numbers, because someone will raise it. Treated blood pressure counts as one of the five markers used to define metabolic syndrome, which is a cluster of linked health risks. You need three of those markers to meet the definition. I have one, so I don't have metabolic syndrome. What I do have is a cardiovascular risk factor that I manage. Those are two different sentences, and I'd rather say both than round myself up to healthy. Let me be clear about where this technology earns its place. For the right patient with diabetes, continuous glucose monitoring is genuinely useful. A review published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine title on the 3rd of August this year pulled together the randomized evidence in type 2 diabetes. Average HbA1c fell by about 0.33 percentage point, Compared with finger prick checks or usual care, some patients gained considerably more. And much of that evidence came from people already taking insulin or other glucose-lowering drugs. That was a narrative review, which means the author selected and explained the existing research without the strict search process of a systematic review. The journal asked them to write it. For everyone else, the sentence is much thinner. They found only limited and indirect support for these devices in people with type 2 diabetes who take no glucose-lowering treatment, or in people with prediabetes or obesity. No conflict with any monitor manufacturer was disclosed. Prediabetes is a different case. And I want to say that plainly because the evidence there is more promising. What I'm talking about today is healthy adults with no symptoms. One of the authors, Minna Johansen, set the boundary in a statement from her university. She said the technology is tremendously valuable for certain groups of patients, but that it's increasingly being used by groups where we simply do not know whether it provides any benefit at all or whether it could even be harmful. The review didn't measure a rate of harm. What the author suggested was using these monitors only when a specific patient problem gives the readings a purpose. That's their advice. It isn't a clinical guideline. For what it's worth, the American regulator cleared this particular monitor for sale over the counter to adults 18 and older who don't use insulin. That includes some people with diabetes. Its screen only covers a range from 55 to 200, and the agency says users should consult a qualified health professional before taking any medical action based on what it shows them. Now, even a precise number can mislead you. A research group ran a study in 15 healthy adults. Each person completed the same set of meal tests, with the order chosen at random, so the researchers could compare each person against themselves. The continuous monitor read about 16 milligrams per deciliter higher than a finger prick test, before meals and after them. For one smoothie, the monitor put the glycemic index at 69. The finger prick method put it at 53. Glycemic index is just a score for how strongly a food raises your glucose. Now, those two estimates came with wide ranges of uncertainty around them, and the ranges overlapped a great deal. So treat that as one drink in 15 people and not as a general error rate. Here's the part that matters more. After the researchers adjusted for where each person started, the monitor still showed about twice as much time above 140 compared with the finger prick method. And note what was being measured there. Time spent above a line, not the glucose concentration itself. I should tell you who paid for that study. A smoothie company funded it with a grant that didn't let them direct how the study was run, and they also supplied the test products. A smoothie company paid for the study that found these monitors make smoothies look worse than they are. I've read that sentence several times, and I still find it funny. And then there's the study that changed how I think about this whole category. 18 experts in continuous glucose monitoring were given 20 reports from adults without diabetes and asked a simple question. Looking at this report, would you call this person back? The reports had deliberately been chosen because they were difficult. They could not agree. There's a statistic that measures how much a group agrees beyond what chance alone would produce. 0 means you're at chance level. 1 means perfect agreement. These experts came in at 0.36, which the authors themselves called low. All 18 gave the same answer on only 3 of the 20 reports. One rough pattern did appear. When more than 2 out of every 100 readings sat above 180, somewhere between just over half of the experts and all of them recommended follow-up. It depended on the report. The study never proved that 2% was the right alarm line. My own reading, and this is mine and not the study's, is that the number came out of diabetes care. It was built for people with a disease. and it's now being pointed at people who don't have one. The author said there are no guidelines at all for interpreting these reports in people without diabetes. Diabetes care, by contrast, has its own. This sits in the Activate part of my Upward Arc framework, which is about food and movement. It also reaches into capacity, because attention is finite. Every new number asks you to look at it, interpret it, and decide something. Before buying a monitor, a healthy person should think about what reading would make them change their behavior. So, try this today. First, write down the exact number that would make you change what you do. Add what you would do next and what result you expect. If you can't fill the page, that tells you something. Second, if you have diabetes, prediabetes, symptoms, if you're pregnant, if you have medication concerns or another metabolic risk, take this question to a clinician. This edition doesn't cover you. Third, try the habit without tracking it on a graph. Eat your protein before your carbohydrates if you like. Take a 10 or 20 minute walk after eating. See whether you can keep it up. And fourth, price the experiment in money and in attention. In the United States, this monitor launched at $89 for two sensors, each lasting a fortnight. In the United Kingdom, Boots was listing two sensors at £118. Decide before you start when you'll stop. About a year ago, I noticed an open glucose monitor package on a desk at the office next to a screen. A blister pack of patches was still sealed. The desks were shared, so I didn't know whose it was. Later that day, a colleague told me they'd seen an influencer wearing one and bought it with a discount code. They showed me the sensor on their arm. I asked what they'd learned. Eating protein before carbohydrates seemed to flatten the curve. A 10 or 20 minute walk after eating did something similar. Fruit, or something sweet, made glucose rise and then fall. I could have told them all of that without a sensor. A few weeks later, I asked whether they were still using it. They had stopped. My own inference is that it had been an expensive way to learn some basic lessons, but they never said why they quit. Here's the thing I didn't expect to find. Normal is much broader than it looks. The Framingham study followed 560 adults whose standard blood tests placed them squarely in the normal glucose range. Even so, their readings sat between 140 and 180 for almost 3 hours a day, then above 180 for another 19 minutes. Total time above 140 averaged roughly 3.25 hours. Now, that's a group average, so it doesn't predict any one person's day. Those participants average 59 years old, and their average body mass index was 26.5, which puts the group in the overweight range. A second study followed 153 healthy people, none of them obese, age 7 to 80. That group averaged 31 years old. Their average glucose was around 98 or 99 below the age of 60. And 104 above it. I think the difference between those two studies comes down to age and to who was recruited into each one. The younger group excluded people with obesity. The Framingham study looked at an older community group. Neither paper actually tested that, so take it as my opinion. Both of them show the same thing. Healthy glucose moves around. And a colored line on a screen can make that ordinary movement look like a problem. Now let me take the strongest argument for these devices seriously. The claim is that watching a number move changes what you eat, whether or not the number itself teaches you anything. In one study, 1,000 generally healthy British adults ate identical standard meals, and their responses varied widely. That's real. But it describes the spread of responses across a population. It isn't the share of people who reacted differently, and it isn't a treatment effect. Several of the authors worked for, or consulted with, a company selling personalized nutrition. A review this year pulled together 23 studies in people without diabetes. It found signs of benefit in pre-diabetes and no appreciable improvement in the healthy groups. Most of those studies ran 12 weeks or less, and most paired the sensor with educational coaching, which leaves the sensor's own effect unclear. Another review covered 25 randomized trials of these monitors used as a behavior change tool. Only 3 of the 25 involved people without diabetes, and all 3 of those were in obesity. Every single trial added other support alongside the device. 8 of them supplied weight data. The combined result was 700 grams lost, and it missed the usual statistical cutoff. It was not a significant result. And 11 of the 25 trials reported conflicts of interest with the monitor industry, which proves neither funding nor bias, but is worth knowing. When I walked up to that booth, I was open to trying one. After talking with them, I kept coming back to the same question. What should you actually do after seeing a normal rise in your glucose from eating a banana? I still don't have a good answer for a healthy person with no symptoms. My first thought stands. For that group, one of these is mostly a waste of money. A monitor might encourage you to take a walk. It can also turn ordinary changes in your body into warnings that even the experts can't interpret. I already have enough information to decide when to take a walk. I took the electrolyte powder and I left the monitor behind. If you've worn one of these without a diagnosis, I'd genuinely like to know what decisions you're still making differently 6 months later. Just reply to the email this came in and tell me exactly what changed. I want to know if I'm missing something. Stay healthy, Andre